Her hips were full, her breasts very large and firm, seeming to overburden her slim waist, and she was dressed very nicely. Her hair, adorned with a garland of holly flowers, was scattered about her beautiful face. Her earrings were brilliant, and she smiled very attractively. Glancing upon everyone, her beauty drew the attention of all the inhabitants of Vraja, especially the men. When the gopis saw her, they thought that the beautiful goddess of fortune, holding a lotus flower in her hand, had come to see her husband, Krishna. While searching for small children, Putana, whose business was to kill them, entered the house of Nanda Maharaj unobstructed, having been sent by the superior potency of the Lord. Without asking anyone's permission, she entered Nanda Maharaj's room, where she saw the child sleeping in bed. His unlimited power, covered like a powerful fire, covered by ashes. She could understand that this child was not ordinary, but was meant to kill all demons. Lord Sri Krishna, the all-pervading super soul, lying upon the bed, understood that Putana, a witch who was expert in killing small children, had come to kill him. Therefore, as if afraid of her, Krishna closed his eyes. Thus Putana took upon her lap him who was to be her own annihilation, just as an unintelligent person places a sleeping snake on his lap, thinking the snake to be a rope. Purport. In this verse, there are two perplexities. When Krishna saw that Putana had come to kill him, he thought that since this woman was present with motherly affection, although artificial, he had to offer her a benediction. Therefore, he looked at her with a little perplexity and then closed his eyes again. Putana Rakshasi was also perplexed. She was not intelligent enough to understand that she was taking the sleeping snake on her lap. She thought the snake to be an ordinary rogue. The two words antakam and anantam are contradictory. Because of not being intelligent, Putana thought that she could kill her antakam, the source of her annihilation. But because he is ananta, unlimited, no one can kill him. So we have all these contradictions in this particular pastime, in this verse here, that Srila Prabhupada brings up. The aspect of Krishna dealing with somebody according to how they interact with him. And Putana, whose business is to kill the children, but she can understand that this child is meant to kill her. So you have two aspects here, and in each of them you have these two opposites. That Krishna is there to, you know, protect the devotees, to annihilate the demons, and this demon has come to bother him or try to kill him. And in this mood, but she is taking the form of a mother. So because of this, then naturally, even though it's artificial, he is still reciprocating with this mood. So that itself is a perplexity. Is how is it that she has come to kill him, but he is accepting her as mother. At the same time, being a demoness, he will have to kill her. So these various aspects, then, someone like Krishna, he's Krishna himself, he can work these things out. Because with him, there is nothing too perplexing. His intelligence is very great, very deep. So he can understand what is the perfect thing to do in any situation. So here in this situation, then Krishna is dealing with her according to what is needed, and how she has approached. So this we see then in the second aspect, then she has her duties to perform, but at the same time she sees that here is the greatest obstacle to her duties, that she's not going to be able to perform her duty. That in this case, then this person, though she is seemingly meant to kill him, he is actually meant to kill her. So she is, but because of not being so intelligent, she can't work this one out. Krishna is intelligent, he's unlimited, he'll work his perplexity out. But she's not so intelligent, she won't be able to work hers out in this case. So we see here is then many aspects that are we can apply in our devotional service. Is this principle of aropya, mean to lay over something, place over something. Is in the beginning stages of devotional service, then basically what we're doing is we're overlaying our own desires over devotional service. Means basically we're taking what we want to do, and then somehow or another, because it's the better option, we're figuring out how to do it for Krishna. But the inspiration for doing it is ourself. It's we are disturbed with the material nature. We are having difficulties. We are having problems. So therefore, we have turned to God. If we're not having problems, we don't turn to God. Now, God has never had a good opinion of the living entities in the material world. It's never been His preference. So if we're thinking, no, I'm doing this because it pleases God, then why did we come? Because it never pleased Him. So we see the basic principle for being in the material world is we want to do what we want to do. So with time and practice, then we come to the platform of what is pleasing to Krishna, that's what we want to do. But in the beginning stages, then generally we see we take what we want to do and then try to connect it to Krishna, if we are that interested. Otherwise you may connect some things you may not connect. So we overlay. So this is as putana, less intelligent. Because we're not so intelligent, therefore we think, oh, it will work out. I will perform this materialistic activity. I will try to connect Krishna with it in some way. And I will expect that it will not give any material reaction. Because I'm doing it seemingly connected to Krishna. But since it is the medium, and then there is the service, right? So then the medium is laid over the service, right? In the beginning stages, rather than the service is laid over the medium. This is the difference. So when we take the medium that we're going to use for the service and put that over the service, then the results of the medium or that activity are our goal. So naturally, an activity will give a result. But since the result has been done to get the result, therefore we're entangled in the result. So if it's a good result, then we're very happy, we're elated, we tend to forget Krishna. Or if it's not a good result, then we become disturbed. We may feel bad, we may enhance our detachment. You know, we may feel bad that it's someone else's fault. So in other words, we may be liable to material reaction, material emotions, because the medium we're using is material that we're then engaging in Krishna's service. This is the difference. The more advanced way is you're doing the opposite. You're taking service. I want to serve Krishna, so what am I going to serve Him with? I have a body, I have mind, and I have words. That's all I have.
I don't have something else. So I'm going to take devotional service and lay that over what I have. Okay, what do I have? I have this kind of brain, this kind of facilities, this, that. So then I'll use those to serve Krishna. So the medium becomes subordinate to the service. So because of that, then that activity then is giving itself a purely spiritual result. Means the devotional aspect is there, and the material aspect is then spiritualized. So then both become consistent. So the performance of the activity, the results of the activity, in both were happy. But when we lay our desires over devotional service, we get the spiritual benefit for having done it in some way connected to Krishna, or that the result will be given to Krishna. But the difficulty is, because of our attachment to that result, our attachment to that material activity, it will also give that material result along with it. So that's the less intelligent position. So now one may think, well, okay, now if we look at this, the question comes up, why would Krishna behave nicely with her as a mother when she's a demon, she's come to kill him, and she's a nonsense, and she deserves, you know, whatever she gets, right? But then, if we apply the same principle in our own life, then what about when we lay our own material desires over devotional service? That's nothing glorious. I mean, what's glorious, of course, is that it's connected to Krishna. I'm talking about how we look at ourselves, not how we're going to look at others. Looking at others, we look at it, they're doing devotional service. Okay, maybe impurities are there. Those will go with time. Nothing's more powerful than devotional service. So there's nothing to get an anxiety about. But for ourselves, Krishna's looking for what, you know, he is looking that you get to the point that you're actually aware of what you haven't given, rather than very confident of what little we have given. Because Krishna, he is looking at what has been given. But we're supposed to look at what we haven't given. Right? Prabhupada gives an example. The very immensely wealthy man gives a small donation. Krishna doesn't see the small donation, he sees what you didn't give. Right? And then reciprocates accordingly. So in a relationship, naturally you want to see the nice part. So then Krishna, as the Lord, has to see both sides, but in a relationship, he deals with how you approach him. Right? Like someone approaches you very pleasantly, maybe they have some motive, but you respond pleasantly. That's the etiquette. At the same time, you must make yourself aware of what is the, the motive behind it, and act in the overall picture to save yourself from any inconvenience. But since they've approached you in a pleasant way, you reciprocate. You don't tell them, yeah, I know you're motivated. No, they've approached you in a nice way. You reciprocate nicely. Since they are trying to do something to you in a hidden way, you're going to get out of it in a hidden way. That's the etiquette. It's just the way it is. So Krishna, and why? That's because that's the way Krishna feels. So Krishna, Putana has approached him as a mother. He'll reciprocate with her as a mother. At the same time, being a demon has come to kill him, he's going to reciprocate with that also. So both are going to be done. So that works to our advantage, because when we're applying our own material motives on devotional service, Krishna looks at the effort of that devotional service. It doesn't take so seriously the motive behind it. But at the same time, it's through the modes of nature, Krishna is going to take care of that motive. Krishna is going to deal with that motive. Therefore, even though we're doing devotional service, we may see all kinds of things go haywire for us. And we're disturbed by it. So that's because there's some motive is there. Thank you. So then we see in this, it works both ways. That Krishna is kind to those maybe here as Putana, and then we may be thinking, why is that? We should just chastise her. Why he's being so kind to her? But in the same way, then what do we expect for ourselves? No, we expect God should be kind to us because we're doing a little bit for Him. We're doing something for Him. And He should ignore our faults. But for others, no, He should be very strict, and as it is, you should give it to Him and no nonsense, and you must be straightforward and all this and that, and so much new speak, and you know, like that. But for ourselves, we're very, you know, very broad-minded, very liberal. And for us, others, you know, straightforward, strict, down-to-earth, practical, pragmatic, you know, all these nice terms like that. The sources have loads of them. You can look up and find whichever one, you know, sounds nice. So we see this is the problem. Is that the demoniac nature in ourselves, we're very accommodating. That material nature in others, intolerant. But this is the problem. Generally we see when we're not intelligent, we take up the mood of the other party. Right? This is the problem. If you look at relationships that don't work, this is exactly what's happening. Right? The kid is telling the parent what to do. And the parent is trying to accommodate, and well, at least he's around, at least this, at least, you know, he does all the nonsense where I see him, it could be worse. He's trying to accommodate, and the kid's telling him what to do. Is that the parental relationship? No, it's exact opposite. The parent says what should be done, and the kid accommodates that. That's real relationship. The other one is not. It's false. It's okay, it's something. It's better than a void, or it's better than impersonalism. Not much. Not much. But because it's something and the living entity requires relationship, it's better than zero interaction. But we must know that this is not real. Even though everybody in the world who doesn't care for Krishna's concept of relationships may be doing it, so what? That is the consider. So what is they're doing? What does it matter? They're still going to get the bad result of the activity they're performing. You perform an activity, it doesn't matter what we think the result should be. The result will be according to what it's going to be. Right? Now let's say we take some fruit and stick it in a blender. We would be foolish to think it's going to make it into nice little square perfect cubes. We may think it's going to make it into cubes all we like, but when we push the button, we're going to get puree. We're going to get a mush. You may get up, you may write books, you may stand on your orange box in Hyde Park, you may say whatever you like, that it's going to be cubes. And everybody may stand behind you, and petitions are written, you know, surveys are taken, you know, and the Gallup poll says yes, 98% says it'll be cubes. It doesn't matter. It's going to end up as mush. So that's the way the material world works, despite us. She knows what she's supposed to do, and she does it. And it doesn't matter who you are or who you think you are. She's going to do what she's going to do. You put your finger in a fire, you're going to get burnt. It doesn't matter what you think. You're going to get burnt. You stick your hand in water, it's going to get wet. Right? You stick your nose in a decent flower, you're going to get some smell. It's just the way it is. So that the sooner we acknowledge that, the sooner life goes very easy for us. Right? Because it's very difficult, one, dealing with material energy, which is already temporary, let alone go and try to push the boulder of seeming gain of happiness in the material world up the hill. It won't work. It's never worked. You know, there's been no one in the material world who has been sustainably happy. There hasn't been one soul in the history. So therefore, why go against the nature? So the principle here is therefore, then we have to look at, okay, what is my side of the relationship? Okay, maybe I'm expert at knowing the other side, but what is my side? And stick to your side. Then you'll see it works. If we stick to our side of the relationship, then generally you'll see others will stick to their side. Right? If I've taken the other side, and actually someone takes this, right? They must complement. Right? It's just like if I bring you a bowl, then you'll pick up a spoon. If I bring you a spoon, then you'll take the bowl. Right? No one's going to eat with two bowls or two spoons. It just won't work. So however we deal in a relationship, the other person is going to respond whatever is the natural complement to that. The complement doesn't necessarily mean it's nice. It just means what matches. So if we've taken the other mood, naturally the others take this mood. Right? The juniors become strong, the seniors become weak. Right? Whatever is the relationship, you take the opposite side, the person will take this side. It's just the way it works. You can't get both sides to do what you want to do. The plan's already made. You let go of something, it goes down. You can decide whether you want to let go or not, or what things you want to let go of and let go down. You have no choice that I'm going to let go and it's going to go up. It's not available in choice. So therefore, you can decide in the relationship, okay, do I want to act against the relationship and have them act against it? Yes. Or we act with it and we have to live with it. Either way, you've got to live with it. We have to be humble, we have to take to be dutiful, we have to do what we're supposed to do. And maybe not as nice as telling everybody else what they're supposed to do. But then we have to decide, have we been appointed to tell the universe what they're supposed to do? Right? Or should we look at seriously, maybe, well, what am I supposed to do? And if I do what I'm supposed to do, then others may do what they're supposed to do. Of course, you may say, well, how can I do what I'm supposed to do till everyone else is doing what they're supposed to do? But of course, because we're thinking that, everyone reciprocates with that. So everyone else says exactly the same thing. So the easiest thing to do is figure out what we're supposed to do and just do it. And don't worry about if everybody else is not doing what they're supposed to do. Unless it's in your jurisdiction. To train them what they're supposed to do. But if not, don't worry about it. Right? The new bhakta doesn't have to worry about what decisions the GBC should make or should have made. It's not important. It's not their business. So therefore, just stick to what you're supposed to do. We do it. It works. That is a sign of intelligence. Being able to figure out what everybody else in the world should do. It's not so intelligent. Everybody's already doing it, so it's nothing special, right? You go to any time in the evening time, you see devotees sitting around solving the problems of the whole universe. It goes on daily, right? All those late night important discussions that you had to stay up for, that you solved all the problems of the movement, everybody's doing it regularly. Nothing special. And no problems have ever been solved. Right? We just feel good because we we had the, you know, intelligence and the capacity to do it, but since we're not in the position, we're not doing it, so what can I do? No one asked us. But if I was, you know, asked, I would say, don't worry about it. Figure out what you're supposed to do. That is austerity. Right? Austerity doesn't mean you have to stand on your head or do all kinds of weird things. Austerity means just doing just what you're supposed to do. That's it. That's austerity. That austerity pleases Krishna. Okay, I'm just supposed to follow. Follow. That's the austerity. Okay, I'm supposed to lead. Lead. That's the austerity. Whatever it is, do it. That pleases Krishna. Then the contradiction is worked out. Right? See, Putana, the contradiction is there. She presents herself one way as doing another. So Krishna has to deal with both. Krishna will deal with you how you've approached him, but he will deal with you also with what is in the heart. And as those two come closer together, then we won't feel any difficulty. As long as there's a difference between these two, we'll be in anxiety. Right? It's not the problem of the movement. It's not the problem of this leader, that leader, this situation, nothing. It's us. We're our only problem. The only problem we have in the whole world is ourself. There's not one more problem. We're our own problem. As soon as we stop being our own problem, we have no problems. They just don't exist. Right? Material world is going to be created, maintained, and destroyed. That's going to go on anyway. Just dogs bark, birds fly, you know, snakes crawl. Excuse me, slither. So, there's not going to be any... That won't change. But if we're attached to any of those things, or we either want them or disturbed by them, we suffer. As soon as we're not working, we don't suffer. Right? Is that understood? So, as soon as also we're not attached to our body, then what happens to the body? It grows old, it's diseased, it doesn't bother us. We take care of it, we deal with it, because that's the nature of it. But it's not an anxiety for us. It's going to go anyway. Today, tomorrow, the next day. Right? So we think, no, it'll last forever. We're in anxiety. Right? Someone's born, they don't, you know, when they're young, they're cute. When they get older, they get more beautiful, handsome. Then when they get older again, they get less beautiful. Right? It's just the way it works. You know, we're in anxiety. How come I haven't gotten old enough to be beautiful yet? Or am I already, how am I, why am I getting older so now I'm not so beautiful? Then it's a problem. Because of attachment, we create the problem. Otherwise, it's just the way it is. So, like that. Then we see is, then there's no contradiction. Either for Krishna to work out or for us. If we're not having, laying one thing over another that's not pleasing to Krishna or not fully done for Krishna's pleasure, we have no problem. And when we come to that platform, then Krishna doesn't have anything that he has to work out. So in that way then, if we take up, you know, the devotional service in that mood to please Krishna and then engage whatever we have in Krishna's service how Krishna likes, then it works. Right? See, first stage, we do it how we like. And then the result is somehow another connected to Krishna. The next stage is we do what we like, but we do what Krishna likes, you know, but how we want it to do it. Then the next is we'll do what Krishna likes, how he likes it done. So when we get to that stage, there's no contradiction. Then the relationship in our life becomes easy, and our relationship with Krishna becomes easy. Otherwise, there's always going to be some difficulty. Any questions or comments? Or? Yes. Then in the relationship, how do we operate it when the situation is different from the standard situation in which the relationship is manifest? Example is given, like with the children, you're with them in intimate situations, you may deal with them in one way or another, but when you're in a formal or public situation, then one may deal differently. But the children, they still not understand the difference in the situation. Or in an example we gave in Krishna book, is that when Krishna came back into the palace and the queens went out to meet him, then they sent their son to embrace Krishna, because in front of others they wouldn't do that. So even though they would like to, they don't, because of the situation. So that always must be seen. Is there's the relationship, and then there's the situation in which the relationship is manifest. Without both of these, then it won't work. The relationship won't happen properly, because no relationship is unconnected to others. So then that is the aspect, is we must first know what is our relationship. What is our position? Second, we must know what is others' position. Third, we must know what is the natural relationship between, therefore, ourself and that other person. Then the fourth, we must understand the situations that influence that relationship and how that relationship will be molded. Or, how you say, according to the different situations and manifest. Someone who can understand those four, they then can lead others. Not before. Like that. So that's the Vedic culture. You start from yourself. Self-realization means you start with yourself, not with everybody else on the block. No, you start with yourself, right? It's not called others' realization. No, I have realized what everybody else is supposed to do. No, self-realization. So then it's a matter of educating or commenting, mentioning, sometimes because the relationship is there, it's strong, and there's certain things that are the stimulus for the relationship. Right? These are called vibhav. The situations or the objects or the personality that causes the relationship to operate. That's called vibhav. So seeing one of those, then it may operate. So there's the sthayibhav, or the steady relationship. Vibhav will cause what is the influencer, whatever it is, it's what is going to stimulate that natural relationship to work. But that's going to be influenced by all those situations. Therefore, then, other aspects are there. How you're going to actually manifest that. So that's called the etiquette. So that's etiquette. So when people know this, it works. Right? Difficulty is, it means you can't always do what you like when you like. And that's a frustration for a culture that doesn't have an attention span more than a split seconds. It's a big problem. So, but the thing is people have to increase their attention span. They have to increase their patience, their tolerance, their humility. That's Lord Chaitanya's recommendation. We're suffering because of material desire, so then he recommends humility, tolerance, respect of others, and lack of respect for ourselves. That's his solution. If that's there, then the next stage is then we give up attachments to the material and we attach ourselves to Krishna. Because if there's no patience or tolerance, then we're not going to actually be able to get so deep in devotional service. It just won't happen. Why is there lack of patience or tolerance? It's because we want quick, immediate results the way we want it, right? Result means enjoyment or attachment. And the way we want it means control. So envy and attachment are the causes of our material existence. And until they go away, we're going to be here. So the modern culture has just worked out ways to increase that to such a high extent that that's the focus. Whatever gives immediate results that we can enjoy, then that's what we do. If it doesn't, we don't have the tolerance or patience. So that can be corrected by education and association. Therefore, then one learns what is the culture by hearing the theory and by seeing the histories, you know, great personalities. Like here we see, perfect example by the Queens of Dwarka. Right? Means the wife is naturally attached to the husband. And if he comes back after a long time, it's natural, then that affection will be, you know, intense or intensified. Let alone if your husband's God, right, who's perfect, right, you can't find a flaw. In the material world, we might find, you know, something that's not up to a standard we'd like, but okay, we can live with it. But with Krishna, there is no such consideration. But still, in that situation, considering what is around and others' moods, they have their mood towards Krishna. The servants and the maids and all these others. Now if the queen goes running up to Krishna and embraces him and shows all that conjugal affection, what is that going to do with everybody else's relationship in the room with Krishna? It's going to stop it. So now, can anyone claim that their relationship's more important? If the queens can say, well, you know, conjugal ras is higher than the parental ras or the other rasas, so it's my divine right to stunt everybody else's relationship by going and doing what I want to do. Right? So that's etiquette. They know that, and they know they will see Krishna privately later. And because they have that patience, they'll wait. Right? Krishna came back in the day. That means they're not going to have that opportunity till night. And on that platform of Baba and Prema, one moment's like 12 years or more. So you take, you know, 1 times 6 times 60 times 6. Multiply that, that's how many seconds you got. Multiply that by 12 years each second. And that's how long they got to wait. But they'll do it because they do not, because of their humility, they don't feel that their relation, manifesting their relationship, can therefore upset everyone else's. Right? And so if you really look at it, then people not understanding their relationship, taking the opposite, and then not applying the situation, they disturb everyone else. That's all. So that's generally the thing. We don't consider others, and we don't consider the situations. So because of that, then you have social chaos. And it's not exclusive to ISKCON. It's exclusive to the conditioned soul. That's all. Whether they're in the movement, out of the movement, half in, half out of the movement, doesn't matter. It's the same. So it's nothing to do with ISKCON. It's nothing to do with the Vedic culture. It's nothing to do with, well, Prabhupada, you know, was nice theory but not practical. It's to do with the conditioned soul. And as soon as the conditioned soul gets serious about the process, gets advanced in devotional service, they'll find all those things go away. They just evaporate, just like a mirage. You try to get water out of a mirage and satisfy your thirst, you're going to have a lot of problems. You know, who put this mirage here? You know, don't they know how to make proper mirages? You know, like that, they put the water here, it always moves. Why can't they make a mirage that stays in one place? You know, you can go on for days, you know, blaming the sand and the sun and the heat and your eyes. And you can go on blaming everyone forever. But the reality is, as soon as you figure out, I'm not going to get any water out of this mirage, I'm going to get it out of the oasis, then our problem is solved. So therefore, if we know what we're supposed to do, then we'll be able to help others know what they're supposed to do. But if we don't know what we're supposed to do, we won't be able to get others to do what they're supposed to do. Right? That's the point. So if you know, then you can explain it to the others, you know, who are there to learn from you. But if you don't know, then they'll never know. Does that make sense? Anything else? Yes.
Here, I see that wherever Lord Krishna wants us to do, that's the best. Mm-hmm. If we can follow what Lord Krishna wants, the same when you talk about education. Lord Krishna has already set the system for educating us, be patient, get his qualities, do what he wants. Nowadays, because of our past mentality and getting results that we want, we try to do different systems of education. And I see, like, trying to make it choose. How long are we going to try? We don't just follow the system that already has set up.
Yes, your comment is that Krishna's already made the arrangements, made the setup. If we follow it, then the relationships, the process, everything will work very nicely. So it's just a matter of accepting and doing it. Yeah, it's possible. I mean, the main thing is it's just like, okay, let us take something. Let us say someone doesn't have an interest in a field. So if you have to stick to that field, it's very restrictive. But as someone who likes the field, there's great variety within it. Right? Does that make some sense? Like let's say, you have to wear a sari. Now one could say, only a sari? I mean, there's so many things to wear. So we get restricted to just that. But if you go into the world of saris, it's unlimited. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that we're restricted to devotional service, just doing it the way Krishna wants. Oh, okay, but then what about all the other desires we have? No, the way Krishna's already thought of ways, any desire that a living entity can have, Krishna has something for it. Right? Since Krishna made the place, then he also has something for everything within the place, right? So it's already done. So it is possible. It's just a matter of making that mental adjustment. Like that, basically.
Huh?
Yeah, Krishna's smart enough, and it's worked. It works for others, right? You have very poor people like Kuladeva Sridhar becoming perfect and getting the Lord's mercy. And you have people where even the richest man today wouldn't be able to imagine the wealth that they had, like Raghunath Das Goswami. Right? And then you see those who are grihastha, so sannyas, you pick anything, Maharaj Pratapurudra, an administrator, others who are, you know, not doing these things, staying away. Everybody, simple villagers like the residents of Kolinagram. So it's like he's dealt with everything. So there's nothing that is not there. If we can't see it, that's our lack of observation or lack of intelligence. Intelligence means to be able to discern. We're not able to discern how this can be applied here means our lack of intelligence, not a lack of the process. So that's there. And part of the process is to contemplate. So it's important that therefore we contemplate what is going on. So if it's not obvious, then how to find it, how to apply it. That's there. That's practical. Because otherwise, if we simply try to do something practical for the situation, I mean, what we think is the situation, unfortunately, many times the situation is bigger than what we see it as. Like, we see what happens right now, but what's going to be the result of that by the end of the day, or by next week, or next year. Right? So that is what Krishna sees. He sees everything. From the moment up to eternity. And then says you should do like this. So it is possible, just if we have that faith and we make that endeavor, then it'll work. It's worked for others in the past and the process is still good today. And it's said that when the person accepts shelter at the lotus feet of the spiritual master, then the material ocean becomes reduced to the size of a hoofprint. Then that boat to cross, the devotional cross, to cross, it stays on this shore because the two shores meet. So it's not that somebody gets on the boat, they take the boat and go away, and then you gotta wait till the boat comes back. No, by accepting the process, you're automatically on the other side. And so that bridge to get you there is always available at any time, any place, any situation. Okay. Stop. Okay.
If someone types people express their frustration or give the rationalization that because they have some nature and they find it destructive or being compelled by their nature, what if it's
to want to?
They who want to fix problems of sin.
Uh-huh.
They feel great frustration about the nature and they're rationalizing that, well, I have this nature given to me by God, but the kingdom has it in here, or their ties and it's not going to be able to be granted. So it's just another example of sidestepping the issue that unless Krishna is the question, unless Krishna provides the key. Say I'm a kshatriya and this is my nature, it doesn't help them to meditate on the
problem. Question, I mean, point comment on that is that someone may feel that they have a kshatriya nature and there's a frustration because they feel that I'm a kshatriya, therefore it's my business to take care of everybody else, get them to do what they want to do, fix the problem, fix the situation. But Krishna has given me that nature, but Krishna hasn't so far been able to get it together to arrange the kingdom in which I'm supposed to do it. You know, so it's actually not my fault. You know, I'm just acting according to my nature. So then we can also, then we take that, okay, let us take that and enter it. Okay, we start with the kshatriya nature and no kingdom. Now, we won't discuss whether they're... See, kshatriyas, there's so many kshatriyas, but only one is sitting on the throne in any one place. And the other kshatriyas are leading the army, or doing things, or ministerial posts, or things like that. Like Bhishma, he wasn't the king. like that, when Yudhishthira is sitting on the throne, his four brothers are also Kshatriyas, they're not the king. They are supporting the person who is the king. So a real Kshatriya, a real leader, is someone who is following someone. If someone's not following someone, they're not a leader. Right? Saying, lead, follow, or get out of the way. So if they're not leading, I mean, if they're not following, then they shouldn't complain they don't have the kingdom to lead, because they're supposed to get out of the way. Right? So that's the thing, is that a real Kshatriya has a leader. And based on the desire of that leader and the direction he's trying to get it done. So what happens is the devotee wants to be independent. And why be independent? One, it means I can do whatever I want. So that means no one's responsible for me. But it also means I'm not responsible. So it's also a cop-out, because one is not taking responsibility. You want to do it, get in there and do it. Roll up your sleeves. Is there somebody stopping you from picking up the garbage around the temple? You know, okay, I don't have the 20 guys to sit there and say, okay, you pick up the garbage, you know, you go buy the loot. No. The king, the prophet says, the president means all the duties in the temple are his. If there's no one else to do it, he does it himself. It's not that the pots are dirty because no one's there to wash the pots, or the guy I told to wash the pots didn't do it. No, it's the responsibility of the president. It's not done, it's his fault. He's so smart, why do you give it to some bozo who doesn't do it and do it? So anything is, he has to do it himself. So that's the whole point. It starts with yourself. That's the one side. But the real thing is okay, look at kings that didn't have kings. Yudhishthira, when he was in a forest, what did he do? Complaining about, you know, this and that? No. He still followed the Kshatriya nature. He was still protected those who ever were within his sphere, whatever small it was, whatever facility he got, he used it for the Brahmins, he used it for others, deserving persons, his dependents. You know, he practices tolerance and forbearance because that's just the nature of a living entity he has to do. And why was he in the forest with no kingdom? Because that's the way Dhritarashtra, who was his leader, arranged it. I mean, we got 350 temples around the world, and I'm sure if you check, at least one or two of them needs a temple president. Probably even a few of them need a few pujaris, or even head cooks, or sankirtan leaders, or congregational preachers. I'm sure if you really work hard, you might find a spot. So my point is to say I'm a Kshatriya that God hasn't given me the kingdom, it means that God gave us eyes, we haven't bothered to open them and look. Right? We take one step, Krishna will take 10. We haven't taken one step, therefore Krishna hasn't made any arrangement. But we want the kingdom the way we want it. No problems, no nothing, everything perfect, already three altars, all the deities, everything in place. I just go in and say, okay, you do this, and you know, and then you know, where's the keys to my personal car, and where's my big, you know, two-bedroom flat, and where's my budget, and my credit card, and my, you know, whatever it is, my life insurance and my pension and all that. And yes, maybe you won't find that facility. You want that, go work for life insurance. You know? Like that. So Krishna's our security, Krishna's our facility, Krishna's everything. Yes, that you're going to find plenty. Hundreds of opportunities. Thousands of opportunities. But we want it the way we want it. Yes, that's the neophyte mentality. And that's the same problem Putana had. Krishna will deal with it. Yes, you have the big Kshatriya. Okay, so let's see you manage your toothbrush. You know, can you get it in your mouth and not drop it on the floor? Okay. So that's the thing. Kshatriya basically is a Brahmin. Just they have that dynamism to administrate. You know, if he's the Kshatriya, ask him how he is in accounts. How is he with finances? Right? To manage is one thing. Everybody manages. Kshatriya means administration. That means your paperwork, your files, day to day, you can be there on time, you're there, not just whenever you like, spontaneously, you see something, you got something to say. Okay, that's more management. That doesn't make one Kshatriya. Just because one sees faults in everything. See, it's just like this. You go to you got this business, you got these management books, right, on the market, proliferation of them. Those are for business management. That's not Kshatriya management. No world leader reads that book for running their country. Right? That's geared towards business persons. Right? Now, the business person, he's one person, he's got a big company. He needs lots of people to manage and troubleshoot. Where does he get them? He hires those guys to come out of the business schools. Right? So they're hired by him. So according to the Vedic culture, what does that make them? Shudras. Yes. So shudras can be damned good managers. Right? A good example is Ramananda Rai. He was the governor of Madras province. Right? Province. That means basically the country. He's a shudra. Because he's managing for the king. He's the king's shudra. So he's doing administration work. A bureaucrat is a shudra. Right? The guys who work and push the papers in the office, but they're not actually, they're shudras. So kshatriyas have, they use the most, there's so much shudras. You go into any one building, right? A government building, there's thousands, tens of thousands of people doing administration. They're all shudras, every last one. Right? The guy who's about, okay, the foreign minister, he may be a Brahmin. Your cabinet ministers, those are Brahmins. They may be kshatriyas also. Right? The president is supposed to be a kshatriya position. So kshatriyas aren't that many. Right? You walk into, you know, Macy's or Saks Fifth Avenue or any of these big shops, you look around, you're only looking at shudras behind those counters. The business persons are up in a room, you'll never see them. You know, you might step out the back and black limo shows up, some guy gets in and drives off. But all those guys dressed up and selling you all the stuff, they're all shudras. Right? And then when it's lunchtime or work's over, they're out in the street. They're the ones that are on the metro. They're the ones on the buses. They're the ones walking down the street. Right? So who are you looking at? Where are those Brahmins? Where are the kshatriyas? Where are those Vaishyas? So the point is, shudra means the average citizen. That's just what it means. Because the average citizen doesn't naturally know what to do. They must be trained what to do. Therefore, that person who trains them is considered superior. Therefore, the Brahmin is considered superior. Or the person who's going to administrate everything so those buses and trains and all the garbage is taken away and the crime rate is down and like that, there's proper controls on, you know, your prices and all. That's the Kshatriya's business. Because they're doing that so everybody else can function. Therefore, they're considered superior. And the business person, because he generates the economics that keeps the whole system afloat, therefore he's considered superior. But otherwise, the shudra is just a common person. Your everyday person is the shudra. And then certain persons have specialties and areas that are necessary for the broader society. Therefore, they're called superior. Doesn't that shudras are very expert in their field? Otherwise, what's the use? Means they're expert at their accounts, they're expert at their sales, they're expert at their management, they're expert at, you know, whatever they do. That's why they're hired by the Brahmin Kshatriyas. Does that make sense? So therefore, just because one has some managerial idea doesn't necessarily make them a Kshatriya. anger is someone who's always angry and arguing is generally thought of as a kshatriya because it's passion. No, anger is ignorance. Desire is passion. But anger is when passion is frustrated, it becomes. I mean, when desire is frustrated, it becomes anger. That's ignorance. So just because they're always angry, bodyguards fight also. And a bodyguard is a shooter. Right? A foot soldier is a shooter. Right? So when some big businessman or administrator or like that goes out with an entourage of guys and they're, you know, with their guns and all that, well, those on that entourage, they're shooters. The guy who organizes them, they get shot. Does that make sense? So many times we miss the point. Okay, he walks around with an AK-47, so he's a kshatriya. No, he said policemen are shudras. They're kshatriyas, shudras that maintain the law and order. A constable is a shudra, the position. The guy who organizes it, he may be the kshatriya. Or the guy with the portfolio of law and order may be a brahmin. The guy who actually manages and administrates the police force, or those people who are in that administration actually doing and have those qualities, they may be shudras. They may also be shudras with martial and administrative abilities, a combination. So you have to see what is the lifestyle. The guy doesn't, is not regulated, is not spiritual, then he's either a fallen kshatriya, which makes him lower than a shudra, or he's just an average guy that sees things and he needs to have a kshatriya engage him in solving the problems. And if he is a kshatriya, he'll do it. You know? Give a side example in business, Vaishnava side. I've heard devotees say, you know, who knows, we've never gotten the opportunity, ISKCON's never set us up, you know, given us the money, given us the capital that we can invest in businesses and, you know, therefore progress. At this, in the same community, you have devotees who are millionaires. I mean, practically, not just that. And what did they start with? $100. Right? They took $100, bought some incense. They sold it. Then they had $200. Then they bought more incense. Then they sold it. Then give them a little time. Then they had $10,000 worth of incense and they start hiring people to sell their incense. That's a Vaishnava. The person who says, no one ever gave us, no one ever, that's not the speech of a Vaishnava. Yeah. That's that person in their life can never do business. Prabhupada tells the story of one of the, he became in, you know, recent history, the richest, probably over the last 300 years, the richest of all the Mullahs in the Mullah family. That family that Prabhupada was from, that dynasty. And so he tells a story that this one young man came from their, you know, ancestral village to the city, Calcutta, and he came to who was at that time the prominent member of the Mullah family. And he came to him and, you know, said to him, okay, I come from, you know, so there, you know, there's some variety of relative and I come from here and, you know, we're a business family, so I'd like you to give me some capital and then I'm going to set up a business and I'm going to do this, this, this. He gave a whole plan how he was going to set it up, what his profit, when he'd be able to pay it back. So the guy could see, you know, he wasn't fooling around. But after hearing his whole thing, he said, so you're a Vaishya? He said, yes. Says, so, okay, you want to do business? Yeah. Says, you need capital? Said, yes. Okay, come here, I'll show you your capital. So he took him over to the window of his office, pointed out the window down into the street. In the gutter of the street, there was a dead rat. And right at that time, that was like the turn of the century, like that, the turn of 1900, early 1900s, there was a plague in Calcutta. And the government was giving 2 rupees a rat for anyone to bring in, which is a lot of money. Prabhupada said at that time, 1 paisa would buy more sabji than a man could carry. So 2 rupees was a lot of money. You know, so they were serious about getting rid of the rats. So the business, the businessman, the mullet, the senior mullet told a young mullet, he said, if you're a Vaishya, you'll go down, pick up that rat, turn it in, get your 2 rupees, and start a business. So the guy did, and he became the biggest of all the mullahs. So Prabhupada said, that's a Vaishnava. You know? And Kshatriya didn't say he's a manager. You know, that they do. Prabhupada gave the example of Kshatriya is 2 kings were fighting. One had lost his sword and only had a short dagger. The other had a sword, long sword. So the guy with the sword had an advantage. So then with the fight, then the guy with the sword, you know, then poked the other Kshatriya with the dagger in the stomach. Right? So now, the guy with the dagger grabbed the hilt of the sword and pulled it, pushed it, so it went through his stomach, and then it brought the other Kshatriya within range of his dagger. He stabbed the guy with his dagger and killed him. Prabhupada said, that is a Kshatriya. He never said someone who can sit around, you know, an armchair or a coffee, you know, coffee room, you know, manager is a Kshatriya. No. Yudhishthira, no one gave him his kingdom. He made his kingdom. The kingdoms are there. They just have to be taken up. Is that okay? Even if they look at every temple we have is fully wonderfully administrated, they can go open another one. Right? You know, I think there's more than 315 cities in the world, so it's always opportunity. So we'll stop here before we make it more comfortable.